Hello, everyone. This is Connie Shaw, your host for Awakening Talks with Compelling People, where we interview leading lights and emerging figures in the fields of spirituality, selfless service, and miracles. This evening's guest is Suzanne Shaw from Danville, Indiana. Good evening, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's good to talk to you. I'm glad you asked me to help.
Well, you're very welcome, and we're delighted to have you back again. Suzanne, as you know, the topic of tonight's show is in-home elder care. I'd like to ask you about how it is that you left Colorado and went back to Indiana to care for your elderly mother.
Well, my father made his transition in March of 2007, right before his 90th birthday.
Yes.
And my mom was alone here in Danville. And this is where she had lived actually since she was 1 month old. And so she was in the home there. So I moved back very quickly from Colorado to help her out and stay in the home with her and take care of her. I still go back and forth to Colorado from time to time, but it's rare because the condition of my mom. I had been going, this was not the beginning of the journey. Since 1997, I had been spending anywhere from 6 to 9 months a year, depending on the condition of my mom or my father, going back, traveling back and forth and staying with them, going in at 3 and 4 weeks at a time, 2 months at a time, 3 months at a time, then back to Colorado, and then back to Indiana. So this is a long-term kind of situation. My mom is diabetic. She has heart disease. She's been a diabetic, by the way, for 27 years. She has heart disease. She has pulmonary fibrosis, which is scar tissue in the lungs, so she's on oxygen. Mm. She has osteoarthritis, severe osteoarthritis, with a 12-inch rod in her spine fused.
Mm.
She has mobility problems because bone and bone knees and neck and elbow and hand problems from the severe osteoarthritis. So there's a lot of challenges. And this has been going on. She's had arthritis since she was in her 40s, and it was progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And about 20 years ago, my father developed Parkinson's.
Oh, my.
And the truth is, he was, in many ways, even with Parkinson's, he was in better shape than my mom. So when I wasn't here, he was the main caregiver for my mom. Luckily, my mom and my dad both had their mental faculties. Just a small amount of dementia, but not to a great extent.
Mm-hmm.
That was not my dad's problem, not my mom's. It was more with Parkinson's mobility problems and also, of course, with my mom with the severe osteoarthritis. So when my dad passed away, he made his transition in March of 2007. It was very quick. Thank heaven for that. It was very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so within 36 hours, he was gone. And that left, my mom could not be alone at all, and so it was not only coming back for the wake and the funeral and making arrangements, but it was also she needed instantaneous care. And she's not bedridden, but she did need care. So that's how I came back to Indiana.
I see. Well, I appreciate your filling us in on that, because I can imagine that at this time our listeners are wondering, how on earth was Suzanne able to leave her job, and what about other siblings, and was she having to do all of this by herself? And so I understand that you are a medical intuitive, and you're also an intuitive life coach, so most of your work is over the telephone, helping people with their life and career situations, and that you are, in fact, an only child. So you were traveling back and forth for a long time, essentially commuting to your parents' home, taking care of them. And then finally, when you moved in with your mother, as I understand it, then you had to really scramble and do some research to be able to find resources and help in your area to assist you with an almost insurmountable new responsibility. Is that true? And if so, would you be able to fill us in on those details?
Yes, it's very true. I'm an only child. They're really no other family members around.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been gone from the community for essentially 37 years.
Oh my.
So I do have, obviously, childhood friends and acquaintances that are dotted around. But as far as a lot of connections to the community, very few. even though my parents had been here, I did not have the connections. So I had to, not only did I move back, but I had to reestablish connections and do a lot of digging very, very quickly to get some level of help in. And on one hand, because I had been coming back and forth to Indiana and caring for both my mother and my father, there was a gradual decline and a gradual need for services. So to a certain extent, I had added services and been digging around for the last 7 or 8 years for various information that I would help and people to help when I was not here. The 6 months I was not in the state, there were things my dad started needing help with because he couldn't care for my mom alone because his health was diminishing. So when I moved back here, I already had some things in place, but then I had to, again, scramble to get another level of help so that I could even get out and go to the grocery store or go to the gym or go for a walk. Go to the post office, very basic because my mother could not be left alone.
So essentially, that left two of you in more or less a survival mode, you taking care of your mother and then having to get out, get gas for the car, and go to the grocery store and do all the things that have to do with lifestyle maintenance and to be able to find some people that could come in for just a few moments to sustain her while you were gone so you could dash back home. Now, could you give us, for our listeners, some of the resources that you have discovered that they might be able to match in their own states and areas, or they might be able to duplicate or create on their own? What about food and fixing meals, and what about the arrangement of the house, and what about help to change the linens and do the laundry, and all of the things that really take 4, 5, or 6 people when you have someone who's either elderly at home or someone who is infirm or injured or ill?
Yes, I'll be glad to go over some things that have helped me a tremendous, degree and amount over the last 2 years since I've been here. And maybe the listeners will be helped in some way.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I just want to say is that whenever you move back, because whether you're in a situation like I am where you are alone and locked into the house where you really can't get out, and it is a type of survival because you don't realize, we take for granted that you just run out, you need something, and you run out the door. And even when you have small children, the moms can be really overburdened with having the children around, but they can, with some effort, they can put them in the car. They can take them along with. And there's usually somebody close by, another mom that has kids, can I take the children there? Can I drop them here for just a half an hour, an hour? But when you're the only one and you have somebody that has a chronic critical illness that is prolonged, you can't put them in the car. You can't just quickly get them in and out. It's a 2 to 3 hours dressing in the morning. It is 2 to 3 hours to get them out of the house for a doctor's appointment. So it's a big ordeal, is my point.
What you're saying is that if people are considering bringing their elderly relatives home or joining them in their own home, then they need to understand that there is a lot of unseen work that is involved just to do normal maintenance and functioning, and all of that has to be factored into the hours of the day available, and then if there's no one else around, this becomes almost insurmountable.
It is, and I want people to be aware that if you make the decision, or if it's by necessity, in my case it was a necessity. It was a financial necessity. For my mom's case, it wasn't that easy to say. Some friends have said, well, how about an assisted living? Assisted living and retirement centers are wonderful, but they are very costly. Medicare does not cover any of that. So unless you have the funds to sustain that, because they may have the funds to sustain for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and you can't assume that my 89-and-a-half-year-old mother is going to be gone in a year because we have longevity in our family. I mean, a lot of our family members, even with health concerns, lived until they were 97, 100 years of age. So the money, if you don't have deep pockets, you have to think in terms of what am I going to do, even if I put them in a retirement center, is that feasible? Because the funds may be gone in a year, 2 years, or 3 years, and then you're going to be back, they're going to be back home with you, or you're going to be in their home one way or the other, because you're going to have to go to plan B. So in my case, it was an instant, I can do this, so I came back to Indiana. And there were a lot of things to think about because, well, number one, you're trying to create, for any of us, we're trying to create, you know, a home and community environment that will enable the older persons in your life, mom and dad usually, but it could be an aunt and uncle, it could be someone else, it could be a close friend of the family, to live with the greatest possible independence and dignity and quality of life and try to create some kind of life for yourself that is also sustainable, because what people don't realize is that once you get into, whether they're in your home or whether you are in their home, it is a 24-hour situation, because when you have somebody that's chronically and critically ill and you are with them, it is there are crisis moments every 24 hours. And that time of crisis could be 2 a.m., 4 a.m., and that can go on for day after day after day. So it's your sleep time. It's your nurture time. It's easy to say, well, go meditate. But when you meditate, maybe at the weirdest hours, when you may go into prayer, maybe at very strange hours. The idea, it's like, well, go get a massage. You can't leave the house. So there are a lot of different angles and things you have to look at. And so you're trying to create the ability for you to live a life and provide a situation where they are also, I think it's important for them to be living a life in chronic conditions, you know, with a chronic condition.
Yes, it sounds to me as if any caregiver has to be extremely energetic, very healthy. They have to have tremendous steely resolve, and they have to be very organized and willing to more or less let their old life go and find ways to tuck in their nurturance and their own little special moments around the edges. And I would imagine that a person who is caring for an elder in the home single-handedly is sleep-deprived for years. Now, as far as the resources that you are going to share with our listeners, what would be some things they can do to lighten the load and the opportunity to take care of an elder, but so that they don't fall into exhaustion and resentment and feel so overwhelmed that they feel they can't go on? What can they do?
Well, these are some things. I jotted down a few things that I thought were essential, and part of it's food and medical and various things, and I'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But the first thing, like so many things in life, we know we should look at it. We know we should get the information ahead of time. Our parents are getting older. Somebody in the family is ill, and we should read more about that. But daily life takes its toll, and we just keep going on our merry way. And until we're pushed to the wall, we don't always do the background searching and the information and have the information in our heads, in our cell phones, and ready to go. Mm-hmm. So these are some things, information and assistance that may be helpful to people. One, be very aware of the senior centers in your community and in the community where your family lives. Because the senior center is frequently the lifeline of any town or community. Now, the town I live in is very small. It is almost a suburb of Indianapolis, but it's still a small farm community. They have an amazing senior center. And the senior center has all sorts of staff that know about federal agencies, state agencies, caregivers. They have all sorts of resources to partner with your resources. They also have a lot of free services available. So your senior center is, to me, is the first place you call. And if your little town or if your parents' little town doesn't have, because the big cities have a lot of agencies, a lot of area senior programs available. But if you're in a smaller community, if your town doesn't, you say, like, well, my little town that I grew up in, they have nothing. But the neighboring town does. The county seat will have something. And that's through all the states, and that is a given that they have programs. But so start with your senior center. Acquaint yourself, because they have respite care. They have they can provide services for laundry, for coming in and doing grocery shopping. They can do a lot of little things. If you need to be away for a few hours, that they can be there cooking, doing light cleaning, cleaning the bathroom. You may be cleaning the bathroom yourself every day, but it's nice to have somebody else one or two days a week following up and doing the same thing. So
absolutely,
at least it's something else you can be doing at the same time. At the same time,
good.
It gives you an out. So the senior center is the first. The second is every state has a council on aging. You can find out by going to the National Counseling on Aging. You can go online on the computer. You can go to your library. Frequently, the librarians will be very helpful in giving you resources. The National Counseling on Aging can come up with all sorts of creative financial sources that may help. If you have anyone that has been in the military, then you need to contact USAA. Now, they have home insurance, car insurance, but they have a tremendous staff with financial advisors, information about co-paying on retirement center stay that can be significant. So if you have anybody that has been in the military at all, contact USAA because they have an amazing resource. Also ARP. People forget about ARP. People laugh about ARP. You may not even be eligible for ARP yet. ARP, again, is an amazing resource because they will be able to quickly send you back into something in your community or the state capital someplace and say, have you tried this? So they are a resource for getting what you need to look at, what you may be letting slide through the cracks that could be life-threatening or financially devastating to the family because you didn't look at something, you didn't get a document done, you didn't get something. And so they can be your head when you don't know that you need to be thinking that way.
Excellent. What about meals?
You have to have good food. And so a lot of times, some of us eat well, some of us don't eat well. And when you're dealing with somebody that's chronically ill and older, you want to balance it out for good food, but something that they can that's healthy for them. And to blend it out, you can get programs with Meals on Wheels, which will give you respite while you're out to make sure a meal comes to the house. Even you can get things like Nutrisystem for weight loss, Jenny Craig. Seattle Sutton is an amazing program that sends meals all over at least the Midwest. And they have these are healthy meals. You can go to your hospital dietitian and get information about what does mom, dad need to eat? How do I need to cook for them? And that's important because don't assume that your diet, even if it's quote-unquote healthy, is going to be the right one for them. And so you need to talk to the professionals to find out what menus are going to best serve them. And that can change from time to time. And it does, based on their blood work and various things happening, they're going to advise other things. Now, if they're vegetarian, you can modify to whatever the hospital comes up with. But there are things that you can use. Cook ahead. You can cook ahead and freeze meals. That can be a time saver and a life saver. When you have a block of time and you're cooking, cook a lot of it. Make soup and freeze it into smaller containers that you can use. This will really help a great deal. Health food stores have a lot of frozen dinners. And frozen dinners, in a pinch, if you have a caregiver coming in while you're out and they're not the one that's going to be cooking, if you have frozen dinners in the freezer, they can microwave them. Microwaving isn't the best by any means. However, in a pinch, when you've got a situation where you can't be there to cook, the person coming in to caregiver is not going to cook, this will fill the bill very easily, and they can get something healthy rather than peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, Suzanne, you are absolutely an encyclopedia of information. Now, what about some other categories?
Legal. One of the things that you want to be sure to have a great lawyer. The great lawyer could be your own personal lawyer that you've been working with for a long time, or could be the family lawyer, what your parents have worked with for a long time. But you do need a great lawyer. You do need to have that discussion where you know if they have a living will. You need to know that you have power of attorney. If you're going to be involved in the caring for your parents or another family member, you need to have that power of attorney. You need to have also a medical power of attorney so that if you go to the hospital, and you go to the doctor's office, that they will talk to you, that you can go pick up reports. It's the little things where you assume that because mom or dad is deceased and you left, you're the sole caregiver of one parent, mm-hmm. that when you go to that office, since you're not the spouse now, they would automatically give you the information. They won't. And so it's a real hassle when you don't have that and you need to pick up information from one hospital, take it to another, or you need to call the emergency room because you're not there and no one will talk to you because the papers weren't in place. So it's make sure that the attorney has gone over everything, because your attorneys really do know what should be done. So ask the questions. If you don't know, ask the questions.
So a person has to be very, very savvy about legal matters, and you have to have the authority and the power vis-a-vis the power of attorney and the medical power of attorney. You have to have that. You have to show that. You must have all information on your loved ones so that you cannot be blocked or stymied at any point of the process.
At any point of the process, because if they get to a situation like my mother did in July where she was in intensive care for several weeks, mm-hmm. if you get a situation like that, I carried all of my papers with me at all times, because even though 60 days before we were at the same doctor's office within the same hospital unit, that had already gone through the state law or the federal law time frame to say that I was legally able to look at and receive information. So you have to carry the papers with you, not only have it done, but you have to carry the papers with you. And those are things that I've gone through when my dad was alive, in situations where it was like, oops, and then we got everything several years ago, but we got everything in order, but it was a big oops because my dad wasn't able to go. My mom went to the hospital. He was ill and not at home and not able to do. I'm going, and they wouldn't give me any information. My mom was in really bad shape.
So you have to help ahead of time. Okay, would it be helpful to just have all the medical records and papers and legal documents in one briefcase so that you just carry that everywhere and you don't move the papers, you just keep it in that particular container?
Yes, brilliant, Connie. I have mine in a red leather binder, and it's a red leather sort of like a legal portfolio mm-hmm. binder. I have everything in there, and it's including the will. And I have all of that in place, and it's red. And I didn't, you know, I'm a black person. I have so many things that are black. And a black purse is black, briefcases, black luggage. I wanted red because red allows me to grab it in a second, because when you call 911 and the emergency team is at the house, you want to be able to, in your state of craze, you want to be able to grab that. And so, and quickly, not only know where it is, but you want to be able to see it, grab it, and you're out the door.
Right, you don't want to have your makeup kit by mistake.
Well, you don't want to have the makeup kit, you know, or grab a thin purse and in your craze state and get to the hospital. You have two purses and no papers. It happens.
I know. I'm only laughing out of complete empathy because I know about these things. Now, Suzanne, we're coming down to the wire. We have less than 5 minutes left.
Okay.
What resources would you like to share with us further? This has been extraordinary, as usual, and I thank you so much.
Make sure that you, when you work with caregivers, be sure that when you go through a senior center or someone that's bonded, it's so easy to get, at times, religious affiliations, they are a great resource. A lot of times, they can come up with a lot of different people that want to help. But when you have somebody that is critically ill and they're coming in to help in the home, you really need somebody that is bonded, that they have the insurance. People that work through the senior centers and the other caregiving groups, although they're very costly, they are bonded, and they will help with cooking and laundry and grocery pickup and shopping. Make sure that if you have a prescription delivery, that you have your credit card on file at the pharmacy so that you do not have to worry about, do you have the $3, the $10, the $20, the copay when the delivery guy comes to the door. This way it's paid for, they will deliver it to the door. And this can be a lifesaver at times because they will handle, if a prescription has been, you need to refill it, they will take care of it. That's a simple little thing to do.
Okay, stop now. This is good. Just back up one step here. How do we know if people are bonded and insured, and are there any papers they can show you so that you...
There are papers they can show you. If you have an agency, if you go to, there's an agency that is big in the Midwest here, and it's called Senior Helpers. They have the papers. When you go in as the caretaking adult and you sit down in the office with them, they will show you the papers, and they will say, we have our, you know, we're bonded, we're this, we're that, and they have that legal information. If you work with a senior center in your area, those people are bonded. They have been screened. You know, you have, they have coverage through the federal programs and the state programs that the senior center is working with, so that you know the people coming in your house, that if anything happens, they would fall on the ice or whatever would happen, that you're covered because you have, hopefully, your house insurance. Speaking of insurance, I've got to say this real quick. One of the things, we had 6 floods in the last 5 years in this house.
6 floods?
6 floods. It wasn't from outside. It was baseboard heat and the release valve malfunctioned, and which does, and they hadn't been replaced. And anyway, long story, but they were major. And my parents had flood insurance for if a pipe broke in the house. They had flood insurance for outside if there was an outside flood. But what they had failed to do was have backwater insurance. It's about a $40 extra insurance, and that means that if the water in the sewers would back up and come through either a basement drain or your toilets, if you have a ranch with no basement on a slab, if the water would come up through the drains in the house, that was, it's a, usually about a $40, maybe a $50 extra for the year pay, and many people don't do that because it's an extra add-on to home insurance. So we had a massive flood where the water backed up from the sewers when Indiana had the floods this last summer, and we found out that $40 extra had not been paid. And so you want to be sure that you go through and get all of the insurance on your parents' home, that they are, if they're both living and you're not just, you're caregiving but not totally living there, please make sure, because you will be the one that will have to go in and clean it up.
And that money, that $40 could have saved you tens of thousands.
It was $30,000. For $40 a year, it would have saved us $30,000, plus the wear and tear and all of the loss of furniture and carpet and everything else that was lost. Also, in the times we live in today, be sure that you have earthquake insurance. And if they say, yes, we have earthquake insurance, you want to be sure that it has been updated to replace what... if something happened to your home, that it's at replacement value, because somebody that got earthquake insurance may not have updated it if they have had it for 30 or 40 years. And
yes,
so they don't have the replacement value on their home for what it is today. And so you want to get as much help as you can, if there is any assistance by the federal government or the state government. You want to be sure you get as much assistance as you can. And those are little things that for an extra $50 a year, an extra $100 a year, you are up to speed with your insurance. And that is a home insurance piece that so often people are thinking of the medical because the family is sick and they're in the doctor's office is with them, but they forget the details of the home insurance. And I am living proof that you absolutely have to follow through, and you can't have them tell you, we took care of it.
Okay, Suzanne, we are coming down the home stretch. Let me ask you this. How many more topics do you have to discuss if we were to invite you on the show again to do part two?
I actually have some more information that I could give, just little details of things that, like, you know, from simple things of mobility and creating mobility in the house and things that you can look for ahead of time, because if you are an only child or if you are the only child of 8 that's going to be taking care of your family. Like one of my friends, there are 8 in the family, and she is like an only child because she's having to do all the caregiving, that if you can look ahead and see certain things that need to be done in the home, it will save you a lot to have these discussions ahead of time.
Suzanne, we're going to have you on again. You have been, as usual, a fantastic guest. And that concludes our show tonight. You've been listening to Awakening Talks with Compelling People. I'm Connie Shaw, and our guest was Suzanne Shaw of Danville, Indiana, on in-home elder care. Thanks for being with us. Visit our website at connieshaw.com and listen next time. Remember, you can make a huge difference by sharing your love, talent, and experience to alleviate human suffering. Please commit to joining or creating a selfless service project in your community today.